Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Blue whales are the largest mammals on Earth. Dolphins are among the smartest. Add their respective skills in sonar, and you've got some promising recruits for the U.S. Navy. Decades after the Navy discovered that the sonar expertise of these cetaceans was superior to any military capability, the nature of how the Navy used these creatures is finally coming to light. In his latest book, War of the Whales, Joshua Horwitz reveals the unknown backstory of the Navy's acoustic warfare program and the challenges made to those practices in court. In an excerpt from the book, published at Outside Magazine Online, Horwitz writes about the origins and goals of the Navy's Marine Mammal Research Program. Joshua, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Nice to be here, Virginia.
Now, the excerpt in Outside details the Navy's use of marine mammals as test subjects and even as weaponry. This began with one man's obsession with bats. Tell us a little bit about the origins of these experiments.
Well, it was not until 1941 in a basement lab in Harvard University Biology Department that a young undergraduate, actually, who had had a lifelong obsession with bats, was able to prove for the first time that bats echolocate in the dark using sound, ultrasonic sound, which had never been audible to human hearing, but because of new technology with transistored electronics, they were able to finally prove that and solve a centuries-old zoological mystery about how they navigated and hunted in the dark. And that same scientist was quickly recruited by the Navy, the Office of Naval Research, after the war to investigate what other mammals, and speculate on what other mammals might use sound to navigate in the dark. And the prime suspect was whales, because they, of course, live in a very dark ocean. And it had always been mysterious how they hunted and migrated in these dark oceans.
So from that, this knowledge of echolocation among some mammals came the notion of creating bat bombs. What was the thinking behind that, and what is it ever used in active combat?
The bat bombs were actually not sound-based. Their idea was to sow incendiary bombs in the chest of bats, take them up en masse in cages, essentially, and unleash them from bombers above Tokyo and other cities, and have them nest inside the eaves of wooden buildings. And then these fused incendiary bombs would go off and burn down the cities. And they actually tested this in the desert. And the problem was that the bats didn't just go there. They flew wherever they wanted, including to army bases and whatnot. So that was scuttled, and they eventually ended up using traditional incendiary bombs.
What a story. But on to the sea mammals, really the nature of your book, which launched the Navy's Marine Mammal Research Program. This was in 1961, if I've got that right.
Right.
How was the Navy using dolphins and whales at that time?
Well, they heard rumors. They went down to Marineland Aquarium, which was the first marine park in America, down in St. Augustine, Florida, where there had been reports that these dolphins, who people were seeing up close for the first time, were making a lot of noise. And again, based on speculation that small cetaceans as well as large ones might use biosonar to echolocate in the dark, the Navy sent its best scientists, which were at the time not marine mammalogists, because that discipline did not exist until the Navy created it, but they sent down zoologists and bioacousticians to study these animals, and they were able to deduce through a series of experiments using plexiglass walls and blindfolds and various other techniques to establish that, in fact, these animals did echolocate. And not only did they echolocate, but they echolocated with much more precision than the Navy's own sonar could accomplish. So these animals could tell the difference between ball bearings of infinitesimal different sizes. They could tell a zinc plate from a copper plate. They could find objects buried in the mud and the ocean floor. And so the Navy really became obsessed with the concept of reverse engineering that biosonar and incorporating that technology into their own sonar systems as well as training the dolphins to do various combat missions such as mine clearing and harbor patrol and other things that utilize their biosonar talents.
How did that work, the training cetaceans to become these kind of seagoing sentries or even delivering weapons?
Well, one of the interesting aspects of the story is that the Navy, of course, knew nothing about dolphins and small whales. It wasn't just dolphins, actually. They also trained beluga whales and orcas and pilot whales, as well as seals and other pinnipeds, which is a different branch of the marine mammal world. In any case, they had observed them in marine parks as being highly trainable, so that was the genesis of the idea, but they didn't know how to train them. They didn't even know how to keep them alive in artificial environments like tanks. So after losing their first captured dolphins to all sorts of illnesses, they recruited the curator of Marineland to come run their program out in California. So there's always been a very integral tie between the marine parks to this day and the Navy, first in terms of recruiting trainers and veterinarians, and subsequently when the Navy had a surplus of animals, they would lease them back or give them back to SeaWorld or other marine parks. And so there's been this symbiotic relationship going all the way back. And they were very successful eventually in training these animals to do, for instance, they can tell the difference between a decoy mine and a real mine, which is very valuable if you're trying to sweep a minefield where only 1 in 10 mines is real. So they use them in Vietnam for minesweeping, but also for harbor patrol in Da Nang. To try to interdict enemy swimmers, and they are quite effective at it. And in fact, we continue to use, those were what are called black ops, those were classified operations that were not public at the time. But today, we're still deploying militarized dolphins or trained Navy dolphins in the Persian Gulf.
We're talking about the Navy's acoustic warfare program. That was something that they used whales and dolphins to learn from, to mimic, and to deploy as weapons. Joshua Horowitz is with us. His book is called The War of the Whales. This is just such a fascinating aside here. Now, this is not the first time animals had been used in warfare. Can you give us a brief summary of how they've been used in the past?
Well, we've always we humans have deployed animals in our service to war since Hannibal used before that. But Hannibal, of course, used elephants to get over the Alps. We've used dogs in war, of course. We've used bats, as I've described. We've used pigeons. Passenger pigeons have been an integral part of warfare in terms of, you know, communicating among troops. So this was nothing new to use animals. What was new here is this idea of reverse engineering their talents to create technology. And what I discovered is that the Navy has spent decades trying to create dolphin drones, essentially, that if you look at them are very dolphins looking in shape and size, and they are equipped with side scan sonar, which is the kind of sonar that the dolphins use, and they have cameras and whatnot. But despite all their decades of research and development, these dolphin drones can't really touch what the dolphins themselves can do. Mm. And so they only work in very simple, like flat-bottomed ocean environments, which are very rare, actually.
Well, that was later in the 80s when they were trying to develop these kind of bionic dolphins. But earlier, another piece of history that you uncovered that could only belong to the Cold War, a fear of a dolphin gap between the U.S. and Russia. What was going on there?
Well, initially, the dolphin program was kind of it was a sideshow in the Navy, and they were just trying to, you know, learn what they could about these animals and see what they, you know, even including their hydrodynamics, how they move through the water so easily with very little drag, and they were using that to design missiles and torpedoes and even submarines. But when the CIA discovered in the mid to late 60s that the Russians had their own dolphin program in the Crimea in Sevastopol, which was recently in the news, they kicked it into high gear. Congress quadrupled their funding and this training program's funding, and it all went dark in terms of, you know, became heavily classified and remained so throughout the Cold War because they were worried that there would be a dolphin gap in the Cold War and that the Russians would have more advanced dolphin military assets than we would.
After all of these examples of using whales and dolphins as instruments of war that you write about, you point out also that scientific research by the Navy has actually helped transform our knowledge of whales and dolphins and supported in a way they're coming to mean something different, you know, in our culture, to symbolize something different. Could you just tease that apart?
The reason I wrote this book is that this story is just rife with ironies, many of them tragic and some of them just surprising. For instance, there was no scientific discipline of marine mammal, what's now called marine mammalogy or whale research, didn't exist before the Navy created it. So they recruited neurologists and zoologists and psychologists and psychoacousticians and all sorts of disciplines to create this new discipline. And most of what we know about whales has derived from Navy-funded research. And the problem that's created is that this generation of scientists are indebted to the Navy for their livelihood. So when this eventually ended up in the courts, it was very difficult for the conservationists to find expert witnesses who are willing to testify against their employer, essentially. But one of the other ironies that's buried in the story is that a few critical Navy-funded whale researchers, including a guy named John Lilly, who some people may remember from the 60s and 70s, he was really the person who conceived of many of the ideas for the whole strategy behind the Navy's Marine Mammal Research and Training Program. And he set up his own largely Navy-funded research program in the Caribbean to look at their communication, because he was captivated by the idea of our communicating with these animals and having the first real cross-species communication. But he sort of went off the deep end as a researcher and got very involved with these animals personally, was in the end dropping LSD, first dosing them and then taking LSD alongside them in tanks. And in any case, he decided that these animals were unfit for captive research, and he liberated his research animals and became one of the fathers of the Save the Whale movement. Mm. And there were other Navy-funded scientists who did the same. So it's just, again, one of the ironies of the story that these forces that collided in the 90s in the court really were both born out of this Navy passion for this biotechnology.
Well, Joshua, it's a fascinating and much larger story. I really want to thank you for sharing just a glimpse of it with us.
Okay. Well, it's a pleasure being here.
Joshua Horowitz is a Washington, D.C.-based writer. He's also co-founder and publisher of Living Planet Books. His latest book is called War of the Whales, and you can read an excerpt for yourself on Outdoor Magazine's website. There's a link to find it at wordofmouthradio.org.